everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan, because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I have such an awesome conversation to share with you this week. It's March and it's Women in Horror Month, so I had the privilege of chatting with horror programmer and curator Karen Coleman. Karen was the director of programming and special projects from 2013 to 2021 at Nighthawk Cinema in New York City, where she founded and directed the annual Nighthawk Shorts Festival and was also the head of department programming. She is the founder of The Future of Film is Female, which we talk a lot about during our conversation. She has curated numerous film events at MoMA and is the newest programmer for the Brooklyn Horror Film Festival. This conversation is awesome, especially if you like to talk about women in film. One last thing before we get into this episode. If you haven't left us a review yet on iTunes or Spotify, we'd really appreciate it if you would do so. It really helps people to find us. To everyone who's already left us a review, it's so appreciated as it really helps people to find us. I think I've rambled enough, so let's get into our conversation with Karen Coleman. Hey, Karen, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Karen Coleman. I'm in Brooklyn, New York. I'm a film programmer and founder of The Future of Film is Female. I am a short film advocate, independent film lover, and horror film obsessive.
Awesome. Yeah, I am. I'm a big nerd, so I'm wearing the Future of Horror is Female sweatshirt.
I was going to wear my shirt, but I thought that would be gauche.
No, definitely not. But I'm a nerd, so.
I love my sweatshirt.
So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
I would say my favorite scary movie is Rosemary's Baby, but it's also one of my favorite movies. So,
okay, cool. Why that one?
Well, I'd love to be married to John Cassavetes with Ruth Gordon as my neighbor, who is a Satan worshiper in the Dakota. That's sort of my baseline. I don't know. I just sort of feel like that movie is a perfect movie in every sense of it. And I love the idea of your neighbors being the people who you need to be the most scared of.
Yeah, definitely. Did you happen to see the movie Nightmare? I think it was. It was at Brooklyn Horror Film Fest last year. It's like a Norwegian response, not a response, but sort of a remake of Rosemary's Baby, like modern remake of Rosemary's Baby.
No, I mean, I do love a good pregnancy, post-pregnancy horror movie. I feel like those are kind of hot right now. Like in my mind, I'm like really into them, but I didn't check out that one. I need to.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
Well, I feel like I tell the story a lot, but when I was 11, I went with my friend and her older brother and sister to see Halloween 5 in a movie theater. And I mean, it scared the shit out of me. I mean, I don't think I was like old enough to sort of watch that yet. But there's a scene that's the one where Michael Myers like removes his mask. And I remember thinking like, oh, he's kind of, well, I was like, he's hot. He is like very attractive. And so there's this, I can look back on it now, decades later, and think there was like this attraction repulsion to it. But, you know, I was a kid who like sneaky watched them at my friend's house, who had like HBO and Showtime and all those, like, you know, watching them late at night, and then would come back home and be terrified. And then when I lived in Chicago and I was in my 20s, my partner at the time did graphic design for this place called House of Monsters. And it was, you know, they sold like toys, you know, like Godzilla stuff. And they had all like this great DVD selection. And every week we would go there and they would say, oh, you need to check out this movie. You need to check out this movie. And it's sort of like, that's like what built my education and my search for like finding these never-ending gems of horror movies. So I think like Halloween 5 was my first sort of introduction, but it wasn't until I was in my 20s where I was like really exposed to sort of the breadth and the weirdness of horror films, and then I was just hooked.
That's awesome. So, I don't know if you get this a lot, but I get this a lot. When people find out that I like horror movies, they're like, "But you seem so normal." So, I always ask people when they come on, "Why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?"
Because I feel like only sane people can enjoy the horror genre. I get more like you don't get scared, and I'm like I mean sometimes yeah, but isn't that the point? To be a little bit provoked. But yeah, I mean I think a lot of us are weirdos. We just sort of look normal.
Definitely. What scares you today in horror movies and maybe in real life?
Well, what scares me in horror movies is anything from Japan.
Okay.
Anything with hair in the face terrifies me. But yeah, those for some reason really like strike a chord with me, to where I get very, very freaked out. I feel like at this moment, after have like the MoMA show, like I'm pretty numb to a lot of stuff. But I will tell you the one thing that gets to me is like people who turn into like mushrooms and trees and sort of that kind of stuff. Like I'm terrified to watch The Last of Us because there was a film that we included at MoMA called Gaia, and
I saw that,
yeah, and that to me, it really, I mean, pardon the pun, it like gets under my skin. Like that is so invasive to me and gross. It's just so gross. So, I mean, does that answer your question? Though that's kind of what I mean. I don't fear like I'm gonna turn into that, but it just there's something really that really grosses me out. Yeah, but most of the time when I watch horror movies, I think the things if they mimic like reality, it's a nice way for me to sort of work through that rather than be like more scared by it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely thought of Gaia when I first started watching The Last of Us as well.
Oh my gosh, my colleague, well, my co-curator Ron was like, here's this film. And I watched it and I was like, holy shit. Definitely not like the most hardcore film, but like it's really, especially like in the pandemic, it's wild.
So what's your favorite subgenre in horror?
Well, I joke that this is a sub-genre, but I don't really know that it is. Women who leave the city to go to the suburbs and find out that it's scarier there than in the city. That is one of my favorite subgenres.
That is
I
a
don't know.
brilliant subgenre because I
Don't
totally agree.
know if that's official like term. I love that. I also love gosh, I'm trying to think of like the series of sort of what I was into. I am very much into like post-pregnancy horror movies right now as a subgenre. I think that's really interesting. And I think it's really interesting how women are the ones telling these stories now. Like when you look back and you think of all these pregnancy movies, you know, like Rosemary's Baby, written by a man, directed by a man, are so from a different perspective of people who can't have kids. Like physically birth them. And now I think it's really interesting that people are tackling, the women are tackling that in particular. Yeah.
Yeah,
It helps me
definitely.
work through some of my like, you know, postpartum PTSD.
Wow. Definitely. The most recent one that I've watched was Bed Rest with Melissa Barrera.
Haven't seen that.
It's not post-pregnancy. It's she gets
Yeah.
stuck on bed rest while pregnant, and then she starts thinking that like her house is haunted.
Oh, I love that.
I think it's on Tubi, so.
Oh, that's good. No, we just did screenings of Baby Ruby and
I've heard about that. I haven't seen it yet.
Lucera. So it's like two kind of po post-pregnancy. Then the women in the film deal with having a child very differently, but they're both really interesting and the types of post-pregnancy films that you don't really see very often of like women making different choices or the reality of how you kind of go a little nuts when you have a child, you know, and it's very easy to like think of yourself as that character. And anyway, but I'm kind of gravitating towards that a lot too. But yeah, I would say those are my two of my favorite. I love Christmas horror too.
Nice. What's your favorite Christmas horror movie?
I mean, Black Christmas. But I love A Silent Night, Deadly Night. But yeah, Black Christmas, always and forever.
I have to ask, what did you think of the 2019 remake?
I think I liked it more. The first time I watched it, I liked it. I guess there's just, for me, I always wonder why films have the same name as something when they can be on their own. Like, I think I didn't have an expectation it was Black Christmas, even though I knew that it wasn't going to be like a remake of it. I don't know. Yeah, there's just something about like Bob Clark's Black Christmas that I love. And then what's the other one from 2006?
Six. Yeah.
Yeah. I rewatched that one recently and I was surprised to know that Bob Clark had something to do with it. He was like an executive producer on it. But I think it was like right before he passed away. That one was, I know, yeah. People really like that one. But yeah, I did like it. We know why I think back on it now. I do. There's something about like things being very dark and those bright Christmas lights and people not knowing what's coming that's very frightening. I feel like I have this like like list of films that's like men who get it right, and I feel like Black Christmas is like one of those things where men get it right in a weird way. And I also feel like, you know, Halloween sort of stole its thunder, so I get very protective of Black Christmas.
Totally. Who are your favorite horror directors?
Oh, good lord. I mean, Karin Kusama, Bob Clark, Wes Craven, Romero, Jennifer Reeder. I'm like going through my list of in my brain, like people that I just adore. And anytime anybody asks me these questions, I like totally forget. Those would be the ones at the top of my head, but I am sure I'm going to come up with some more in the process. But those are like the ones that I'm like really into.
Nice. I haven't heard of Jennifer Reeder before. What has she directed?
She directed Knives and Skin, which came out in 2018. I don't know how to explain it because it's almost like a bit surreal too, but it's a teenage horror film. A lot of her like short films are dealing with like teenage girls, so that's another great subgenre. but it's a young girl is killed and missing, and the town sort of deals with it, and it reveals kind of the defectiveness of the relationships of the different people in the town, and it's kind of wonderfully weird. But she just had a new film come out at Berlin called Perpetrator that I know Shudder picked up. That'll be really good. But she also did, and I'm totally blanking on it, it's on Shudder. It's not called Nighthouse, that's a different movie. But it's about a man trapped in his Chicago apartment. He has like agoraphobia, and basically the world ends, and it's really great.
Night's End?
Yeah. Night's End, yes. Yes. Yes, yes.
Awesome. I will have to look those up.
Yeah, Jennifer Reeder's the shit.
Awesome. So an article came out in 2020 that had said that horror fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
We're prepared. Well, we're prepared, and then we're also just ready to watch a bunch of movies where we don't have anything else to do. You know, it's like, I think for me, like then when the pandemic hit, I took a break. I had a really hard time watching movies in general, like just in general. I think it was because I had been going and going and going and going for so many years. Like when I had the chance to stop, my brain just kind of like, but I do know that Ron Magliozzi, who I curated the horror program with at MoMA, that's where his idea for the horror program came into. He started watching a bunch of horror movies during the pandemic, like revisiting old ones and watching new ones, and sort of thought, well, this is a very interesting moment to like watch horror films because we're sort of forced to reckon with the world around us. And I think they're fun, you know?
Yeah.
But we can entertain ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. My DVD collection grew a lot in the last 3 years. So I had like, almost
subscribe to everything. Let's go.
Yeah. I subscribed to Shudder for the first time. And I'm like, I'm just going to subscribe to Shudder for a month and watch everything I need to and then cancel. And that was 3 years ago.
Yeah, because they just keep dropping new stuff. Yeah.
So you used to be the main programmer or a programmer at Nighthawk Cinema in New York City. How did you get into the field of being a film programmer? And at Nighthawk, did you program mainly horror films?
I started out in contemporary art, and I'll give you the abbreviated version. And then when I went to grad school in London, because I basically blew up my entire life, and I was like, I don't want to have any more conversations about art being about money or where this person went to school or how young and fabulous they are. Like, I just wanted to focus on the work. But I lived in Los Angeles before then, and I loved movies, and particularly horror movies. So that's like, I would go home and watch like two movies a night to sort of unwind. But then when I got to grad school, I kind of quickly came to the realization that moving images was something that I was most interested in. And so my research while I was in grad school was on the relationship between horror films and contemporary art. And a lot of that involves like artists moving images and films. And I moved to New York rather suddenly. My husband got a job offer here, and we just decided, oh, all right, we'll go to New York. And I got involved with Nighthawk, I think maybe like a month after they opened.
Oh, wow.
Started programming short films, artist films in the lobby space. And then just sort of like most people in the beginning days at Nighthawk, did a bit of everything. and what I, the very first film I programmed there was a horror film. It was Death Dream, Bob Clark, and Ulmer's The Black Cat. And it was all, Nighthawk really likes genre films, so I felt a lot like at home to be able to explore some of my weird interests, you know, did a Karen Black series right before she passed away. Did a lot of like rep programming when I started, and then throughout the years started focusing more on like new independent films. But yeah, a lot of that is and continues to be horror films.
Nice.
But a lot of them would be horror films, and a lot of them would be films directed by women, which is still sort of my wheelhouse at the moment. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. do you have any plans to plan screenings in other cities in the future?
I do. I just started doing screenings at the American Cinematheque in Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
We did kind of like joint screenings with them and with Nighthawk for the new book, The Black Guy Dies First by Robin Means Coleman and Mark Harris. This book is so fabulous. I highly recommend reading it if you haven't. It's it's very funny. There's great lists. It's amazing. But that book traces like the beginning of the trope of the black guy dies first with Spider Baby in 1968. So we showed Spider Baby one night, and then we showed Attack the Block another night to kind of show the development of the black hero in horror films. And so we did that in Los Angeles and here. And then we did a recent screening of Fugue by the director of The Lure in both places too. But the dream is to get in a lot more cities and smaller cities too.
Yeah, I have a friend who lives near Philly, and I know he would be very interested. He lives in the same town that the theater that The Blob was filmed at.
Amazing.
So he goes there for screenings all the time.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Is he scared? It's going to like plop down on him.
So, as you hinted at before, you are one of the founders of The Future of Film is Female. It is a nonprofit organization that amplifies the work of all women and non-binary filmmakers through its short film fund, commitment to exhibition and community building programs, as well as the sister organization, The Future of Horror is Female, which is how I first found you when you programmed a screening of Jennifer's Body in October 2021, which was so great. What inspired you to start The Future of Film and The Future of Horror is Female in 2018?
Future of Film is Female came out of, I started the Nighthawk Shorts program, the Nighthawk Shorts Festival at Nighthawk in 2013. And I just had so many wonderful relationships with everybody from that. And I had a real reckoning after the 2016 election of like, what is my position as a film programmer to help marginalized voices get seen? Because that's a like I said, it's a real privileged position to like show something and have an audience pay and are forced to watch it. So I decided to make the shirt, and that was in February 2018, and all the proceeds for the shirt would go to a female filmmaker at that time. Now we're non-binary, gender non-conforming, all that, but would go to them at any stage of production of a short film. And so it kind of started really easily, and I was still at Nighthawk at the time, so a lot of my programming work was just integrated into the work that I was doing at Nighthawk. But shortly after it started, that's when the MoMA program started as well, The Future of Film is Female at MoMA. But I love horror and I work a lot with Magnolia and they have wonderful new independent horror films. So when, I think this is when Censor came out, we were like, what can we do that would be interesting for this? Cause it was still like during the pandemic. And so I was like, oh, well, let's do a conversation. So we did a conversation with Prano Bailey Bond, Karan Kusama and Jennifer Reeder. And I think that that's sort of like where it started because it's like, I love horror films. What can be sort of like, it's so a part of everything I do, like the horror part, but I just thought that's really cool. Because sometimes you just want to be like with fellow horror appreciators. So I just wanted to make it very, very pointed. But yeah, I know that Jennifer's Body screening was so great. And then when we screened it at MoMA, it was so great too. I just think that like that movie is just a good time.
Yeah, and it's really fun to see with a group of people.
Oh, so good. It's always good. It's like, it's always good. And I'm always amazed at, you know, like how many people in the audience haven't seen it. And their pure reaction to it is just so great. Yeah.
Yeah, I had only seen it once before, so.
I've seen it a bunch of times and I'm always picking up like new funny things. And then I'm always surprised that Amy Sedaris is in it. I don't know why, but I'm always like.
Oh, her. I'm always surprised that Adam Brody is in it.
Yes. Or Chris Pratt for a hot minute.
Yeah.
Until he gets burned alive. But yeah.
So speaking of MoMA, you were the curator for MoMA's Messaging the Monstrous last year, which was so awesome. I saw Blair Witch and The Descent and Cloverfield, and it was awesome to see those films again on the big screen. I think I sat a little bit too close for Cloverfield, but fine.
I saw Cloverfield opening weekend, and I had to sit in the front row, and that's tough. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was my own choosing, and like I did not remember how shaky it is because I always just watch it at home on my TV on my couch. So
it's like I remember seeing that in the theater and having to use the restroom and I came back and it was like worse because you get kind of used to it. And then when you take yourself out of it, it's like, it's hard to get back in visually. Yeah.
I saw it in its initial theater run too at the AMC that's down the street from the Time Warner Center. Mm-hmm. So when I came out, I'm like, is it still there? Is it still standing? Okay, we're good. But anyway, how did the Messaging the Monstrous series come about and how did you go about programming it? You talked about it a little bit before with one of your co-curators.
Yeah, so it was co-curated with Ron Magliozzi. It was his idea after sort of watching all these films in the pandemic. And Brittany Shaw. And so I've, you know, I've guest curated Future Film is Female Stuff at MoMA. They obviously know I'm a horror nerd. So they asked me to be a part of it, which is really a dream project with dream collaborators. I think we worked on it for about a year and a half. And we just had like a big doc of films, you know? And it's always interesting when you work with people, like sort of what they have already watched and what they've gravitated towards. And so we just watched a bunch of films and had a lot of discussions about how do we organize this? Because it wasn't a comprehensive survey. It wasn't like, here's a definitive list of horror films. It was a very curated perspective. And we eventually came up with the idea of having like subcategories to sort of explore and play with. And within those categories have sort of a, like a core classic in there. But yeah, all the films started from Psycho 1960. So that was our cutoff. So that eliminated a lot of stuff, even though like it was hard and it was hard to not include some films. And now we keep watching new films and we're like, shit, this would have been great to include. And we want to do it again, but we sort of just kept adding films, like asking for permission or forgiveness instead of permission. Because I think we were supposed to do about like 80 something films and we wound up doing about 115 plus short films. But that was it. And then it was also, you know, okay, how do we A, make something interesting to our horror audience to where they understand it wasn't, it's not made by outsiders who are just like, oh, horror, like horror is cool now, but also to a general audience as well. So there was a lot of thought that went into it, but it was a lot of just watching horror movies and talking about them and very little disagreement in terms of, I don't think at all, sort of what we should include or not include. And if anybody felt super passionate about something, that was in automatically. But yeah, it was incredible. And it was incredible to be at MoMA while it was happening, to revisit films that I love, that I haven't seen on the big screen in a while, that I've never seen, first time watches, you know, like Stephanie Rothman's film. That was the first time, Velvet Vampire, that was the first time that that print had been seen by even her. And so it was like, we'd all just watch these shitty YouTube rips. And then now it's like, oh my God, you know? And then just like seeing the audience that would come and, you know, people's minds kind of wrapping around that horror films are very elastic in what they can be. And they're very different and you might like one, but not like the other. And I don't know. It was just such a wonderful experience. I wish I literally could do it every summer. We called it like horror summer camp. And when it was over at like, there was like a core of 20 to 40 people who came to like almost every screening. And we were all sad when it was over. We were like, this is so cool and fun, you know?
Oh my goodness. Every screening, that's a lot. That's a lot, but that's awesome.
It was a lot. Yeah, I have a friend who like has 70 something tickets. He went to so many. Yeah
I kept asking the people that would take my ticket. I would be like, can I just keep it?
Oh yes. Mine are all kept. Well, the ones that I went to are all kept and I wrapped in a black velvet bow. I'm like, this is like the best thing ever.
Yeah, I'm definitely a ticket stub hoarder, which is why it makes me so sad when I go and have like online digital tickets.
Yes, I know.
So
I know. MoMA tickets are nice too, or the ones that are like sturdy stock. They're nice to keep. But so that's how that kind of came around. They were like, well, you need to talk to Karen and Ron and I, and I'd known Brittany for a while. Like we just really hit it off. And kind of got like this hive mind about what we wanted to show, but it's hard to stop, you know, like you want to keep going. But the biggest thing that I wanted to avoid was someone going, well, why didn't they include that? So I was like, we have to frame this in a way that it's like, it's not because we don't know, but like, these are our selections of things. So.
Yeah. So what was your favorite film that you screened and what is one film that you wish you could have included?
Oh my God. Well, I'll tell you, I wish we would have included Piggy.
Okay.
I feel like that one we had an opportunity to maybe screen it for like the last screening, but the last screening was on a holiday and I didn't want to do a screening of it before it came out where maybe people wouldn't come, but I would have loved to have screened that. I would also Sorority House Massacre. I really wish we had screened that one with or instead of Slumber Party, but those two my favorites. I was pretty darn happy to play Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 on 35. When I introduced that, I just like sat back down. I was like, I cannot believe I just introduced Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 at MoMA on Friday night. Like the world is a weird and wonderful place. I loved screening Pet Sematary with Mary Lambert. I just think she's, because she was there for a Q&A after, and I think she's just such a wonderful person. And so like important to pop culture. I loved being able to show Amy Simons's She Dies Tomorrow on the big screen, because that I feel like is one of those films that sort of got lost in the pandemic. And seeing it in the theater is, and hearing it in the theater is so great. And she was able to come. So those are some of my, like, oh, and then seeing Dawn of the Dead in 3D, that was incredible.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah, it was always so interesting seeing the audiences that showed up, because it would be like some like older types who, don't go see horror movies very often, and then a lot of people just like you and me. So that was whenever it was like a very gory part of The Descent, I would be like, you would hear like gasps. So that was fun.
I love that. And a lot of the people I had the most conversations with were the people who were sort of coming into the genre. Like they've obviously seen Psycho and Rosemary's Baby and things like that, but like never really sitting down and thinking about it, and you know, having someone come up to me and say they love Natalie Erica James's Relic. They're like, this is my favorite film in the series so far. And I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. But
That's
yeah,
such a
the
hard watch.
I know it's a lot of them are hard watches. Descent is I think a hard watch. Oh, it was also funny too when we showed oh God, The Audition.
Oh,
Which
I was not there, and I don't know if I wish I
was
was.
we screened that at like 1 p.m. on a Saturday, I think, or a Sunday, and I didn't come to see it. I came to the next one and just watching the people's faces as they came out. And they were like, I didn't think much of that. You know, what was the big deal for most of the movie? And then I was like, oh, but their faces were like, oh.
I still have never seen that, but I hear that it's like there's not much that happens until the end.
Yes. And
So,
then it's just like,
yeah, maybe someday. One of my friends loves that movie and that director whose name I can't think of, but yeah.
Yes, people do really love that movie. So some people were walking out like, yeah, I saw it. And then others are like, oh my God. Oh, another film that I was really excited to show is In My Skin, which is like a film 2002, sort of at the beginning of French Extremity, about a young woman who basically starts a relationship with herself by eating herself slowly. And it's really wonderful. It sounds really gross, but it's like a, it is. But it's this wonderful art film, and we were able to get the print from a collector who has
Ooh.
like the only like English subtitled version of it. You know,
Oh,
like
that's
those
so
French
cool.
Extremity films are hard to get
I'm sure.
like real content for. That was pretty special.
Wow. Oh. So, you do you seem to be working and programming everywhere, but it was just most recently announced that you were named one of the newest programmers of the Brooklyn Horror Film Festival. I've gone the last 2 years and I love it so much.
That's
Do
great.
you have any idea what types of movies that you hope to secure this year? Do you have any ideas about what you're going to
No. No.
do?
We've just sort of started the process. I think we're having like our first like meeting next week. But I've known Justin after the first iteration of Brooklyn Horror. I kind of brought it into Nighthawk. Like, so that's when it started being at Nighthawk, and I was on the jury the second year, and I've been so amazed at how much it has grown, but always like how everything was just so great that they showed, like really great indie horror stuff that it's like anything I would go see, I really loved, and it was really good. And so it's exciting to be a part of that. I mean, of course, I want to look at good films directed by women. That's sort of the goal. And also, I really love short films, so I'm excited to dive into like what short films and what short film programs can kind of come out of that, because I love horror short films, like love. So and they have great shorts programs. So it's just exciting to sort of be a part of that and then have more of an excuse to just keep watching horror films.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I can't wait to see
Yeah.
what you get on the schedule this year. But speaking of shorts, did you see Give Me an A last year at?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's coming out in May.
Oh, okay,
And I'm
awesome.
hoping that we get to do a screening of that.
At Nighthawk?
Yeah,
Okay, cool.
it's in the works. But yes, I mean, it's endlessly urgent.
Yes.
And so but I'm excited that it's getting like distribution by XYZ. And that's really cool. Because a lot of shorts programs don't get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that that happened and that it showed at so many festivals and that hopefully, you know. I don't know. It's like one of my close friends does like social impact work for documentary films, and I feel like no matter what the film is, if it's about abortion, there's like has to be some sort of social impact around it about like what do we do?
Yeah, I'm glad it's getting distribution because I hadn't heard that anything had happened with it. So,
Yeah, May, early May.
May. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I will look out for this Nighthawk screening.
I hope that's not confidential information, but yes, early May. My mom will yell at me if it is.
Awesome. So, what is in the future for the future of film as female?
Not horror at all, but on April 4th, we're doing a screening of the documentary Naked Gardens. Which is by Yvette Lucas and Patrick Bresnan, and they make these really wonderful immersive documentary films. And they immerse themselves in a season at a nudist colony in Florida, documenting these people's lives. And it's really wonderful. And it's funny because like I kind of wish I could show like some sort of like Doris Wishman nudie cutie in front of it, but I don't, that's not the point, because the point is for it not to be about the gays. But the next feature of film is female program at MoMA will be June 15th through the 30th. So I'm working on that right now, and then just a couple screenings leading up into that.
Awesome. And people
Yeah.
can find that at the future of film is female.com.
Yes. I mean, I feel like my Instagram is probably a little more
Yeah.
future of film is female. Yeah, that is like up to date. The website is too. But yeah, and then I think there's another screen. Anyway, we have a couple screenings coming up, and then MoMA's the big one, where we're going to be doing what we've done in the past, which is like feature films from the past 2 years with short films, and then we're doing a restoration series. It's just going to be really wonderful 2 weeks. There will be horror in that. I can't say what it
Okay.
is yet, but
Okay.
there always is.
Awesome.
But there will be, I think, a little bit more than usual. I can't. I feel like now it's like now that I've got MoMA's ear in horror, I gotta keep it
Yeah.
going.
Oh, that's so cool. That's going to be in June, you said,
Yeah,
or?
June, it opens June 15th through
Okay.
June 30th, and it'll be about like 15 films. Yeah, so if you're in New York, go to that. They have wonderful tickets you can keep and wrap them up in
Yes.
ribbons.
Oh, okay, cool. I will definitely have to check out MoMA's site closer. to that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We're in the process of confirming things, and I'm just very, very excited about it. It'll be our fourth program there and our for our fifth anniversary year. So
Oh,
it's going to be nice.
awesome. So, does your partner like horror movies, or is that something that,
Yes.
yeah, okay,
Yeah.
awesome.
You know, not like me, you
Okay.
know, but he does. I can't. Someone asked me that at a moment. I was like, does your partner? And I was like, yes, otherwise it would be bad. But it was very clear in the beginning when we were together. But actually, my husband owned a video store when I lived in Chicago, and I would rent movies from him. So whereas that's not his business, like his job, his career is not in film, he now there is a nice foundation of
Yeah.
film stuff. So yeah, it's good. Yeah, I like rented Blair Witch Project from him in
Oh,
the late
that's so cool.
90s.
I know you said you have a child. Have
Ooh.
you introduced him or her to horror yet, or how do you plan to do that if you plan to do that?
Well, the first sort of horror-ish film he watched was They Live.
Okay.
In addition to things like, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which I think is like a horror movie, and all these films I watched growing up that were deeply informative about my interest in horror. But so They Live, and he went to MoMA and saw They Live for that was our very last screening. He has seen, you know, like King Kong, Frankenstein, Dracula. I think he over Halloween weekend, we went to MOMI and I made him watch a Vincent Price double feature.
Like a good parent.
Yeah, well, my son's middle name is Vincent for Vincent Price.
Oh.
So I was like, but they were doing all the Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe films on 35 millimeter. So we went and saw Twice Told Tales. And then, oh my gosh, why am I blanking? The one that's actually a Lovecraft story, but oh, why am I blanking on what it's called? Anyway, yeah. And he took it like a champ, double feature. But he, you know, like kids now love Demon Slayer, which is, do you know what Demon Slayer is? Like,
I've heard of it. I don't really know what it is, though.
it's extraordinarily graphic. And it's a manga and a TV
Okay.
show and a movie. And he made me watch like the first episode with him. And he's eight, by the way. And he was like, now, Mom, there's a lot of blood in this. So I don't know if you're going to be okay with that. And I was like, if there's anyone in your life that's going to be okay with that, it's me. So let's go. But it is. I mean, they're basically demon zombies and heads get cut off and it's like, and so I think he'll be okay, but he's like anybody else. There's things in non-scary movies that scare him more than scary movies. Like we just watched the new Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, and like the way the wolf whistles in it just really got to him. But you know, zombies don't at all. So it's interesting what strikes a chord in people.
Yeah,
But
it's
I
different.
hope my goal, you know, is for him to be my movie partner. You know, that's my ultimate goal. I hope he doesn't do, you know, turn around and be like, just kidding, Mom, I don't like any of this stuff. But I mean, any movie. I want to watch like rom-coms with him. I want to watch anything, but especially horror. But yeah, he knows. And I've been training him since he was little
That's awesome.
for him to watch it. But he knows like some things he can't watch. One time I had been watching Shudder and there was I think it was from like All the Colors in the Dark or some like giallo film and it was just paused. And so when he turned on the Apple TV, it was just like a woman like this. And I was like, oh my gosh, he goes, that's okay, Mom. I know you like horror movies. And then he just changed it, like phased him not a bit.
Well, that's good that he can watch them and maybe know that they're not real, so it won't scare him.
Yes. But the wolf whistle of an animated wolf, that is scary shit.
A wolf can, a wo wolves are real, so.
Yes. I mean, what his character is death. I told him, I was like, well, he's supposed to be frightening. His character is death. And Fletcher was like, oh, okay. But yeah, he's a movie lover. And I can't wait till I can take him to more, because sometimes I'm like, you can't come to work with me. You can't come see this.
Awesome. Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Yes. Oh my God. You ask all these questions that are so obvious to me, and then like I draw like a total, like I like to call them one and dones. Yeah, but I can't, why can't I even think of this? What about you? Do you have one? Maybe it'll pique my.
I mean, Martyrs.
That's a good one.
I'll probably never watch Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
I don't think I will ever watch a Serbian film.
Yeah, Serbian film. What about my brain is like so dysfunctional. You know, the worm, the head to butt worm.
Human Centipede.
Yes.
I've never seen it. I don't think I ever need to. I listened to a feminist podcast talk about Human Centipede, the first one,
Yeah.
in the context of the Bechdel effect, and
Yeah.
and it does pass the Bechdel test. So, but they
That's
talked about
good.
it as though it was a very serious film. They were like, "This film, no, this text." It was amazing. So that's how I know the plot of the Human Centipede, but I don't need to watch it. It's okay.
I'll probably never watch Halloween Kills again.
Oh God, that was terrible. It was so bad. Not for me.
That's, I know that's not like because it's graphic.
Oh my God. Yeah, that movie. I don't like 80s horror movies because they're just very cheesy and bad scripts and bad acting, in my opinion. So it was too similar to that for me.
Is very, but it's worse. It's worse.
I can't fight with you there.
No shade to Michael Myers, but no, I know there is, because I know there were some on the list at MoMA where I was just like, I mean, I don't think I'll ever watch like Ringu or The Ring or Ju-on again.
Oh, really?
Just because those kinds of films scare the shit out of me,
Oh.
like really deeply. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, there's something about them. I never see the audition again. But yeah.
The Ring is my all-time favorite.
It's
So,
good. I'm not poo-pooing it
yeah.
at all. It's so wonderful. It's just,
Oh,
ooh. When I used to do this all-night horror fest for Halloween at Nighthawk with my colleague Chris King and then Sam Zimmerman at Shudder. It was called A Night to Dismember. And we did it for 6 years. And we did one. It was The Ring, was third film. So it was like 3 in the morning, and my colleague Chris did like a book report on it. It was crazy. But I was just like, I'm gonna go in the lobby because I don't know if I can watch this sort of again, you know.
it's only PG-13, so
Isn't that wild? Like, that movie is PG-13, and then Megan is PG-13, and the differences between
yeah.
like the effect is astounding.
One is scary and one is not.
One is not. Yeah, I didn't know that Megan was PG-13. And then afterwards, I was like, you know, didn't see anyone actually get killed in that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, because it's PG-13. I could have taken my kid to see that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, even the unrated version on Peacock is not much worse. You see a little bit more blood and you see the kid get run over by the car, but like that's basically it.
I like how you didn't show that, but the ear thing was like totally okay. Yeah.
Well, you see the ear rip off, which you don't see in the PG-13 movie. That was different as well. I remember 2 years ago at Nighthawk, they did the screening of The Ring for, I think it was almost the 20th anniversary. That was so much fun. There were so many people
Yeah.
there who had never seen it before. So,
Yeah.
oh
That's
my
another
God.
movie I saw when it opened, and
Yeah.
I was just freaked out.
Oh yeah.
And my boyfriend's like friend was like, we should call Karen. Unless I don't have friends, like, I can't do
I
this.
think I saw it twice in theaters when it first came out. I think I saw it by myself both times. They were packed theaters, but I think I went by myself. I don't know why I went by myself, but yeah,
That's
I loved it so much.
it is very, very, very good. But yeah, those are probably movies that I won't see. I probably won't watch Gaia again either, even though it's great.
Yeah. So have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Yes. Well, I didn't see it, but we showed it at MoMA to Douglas Buck's films called Family Portraits. And there are three films that basically look at the dysfunction of America.
Ooh.
And the first one is extremely disturbing. There's like castration, and you
Ooh.
see it. A woman like cuts a smile onto her face. It deals with incest. It's really rough. And I programmed it at midnight at Nighthawk. This was 2013, and a man fainted, barfed, and fainted. And that was a source of pride for me. But the best part was that. Because I was there for another screening, so I was there when I got out. A horror mom's Facebook group came to see it, and they stayed the whole time, and they were like, "That was amazing. We'll never watch it again, but it's amazing." So that was like a real source of pride.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, at the Knights of Dismember, we had a satanic wedding for our last one. We had a satanic wedding. This couple wanted to get married, and they are like, the event manager at the time was like, "Oh, they come to all the Knights of Dismembers." And I was like, "Well, do they want to get married in Knights of Dismember?" So my colleague Chris married them, and Sam and I were like up there getting married, and they did the ropes and the fake blood and all this stuff. And then we watched Alucarda, and it
Oh,
was
that's
amazing.
so cool. Yeah.
So that was a
Yeah,
fun experience with horror stuff. But I usually just find those to be like the best audiences. Truly, truly, truly the best.
it's so good. It's so much fun seeing a horror movie with like an enthusiastic audience.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, it makes going to see like the new Scream, it made it fun, you know, because you're just there with like 100 people who are just ready to go, and you're like, even if this isn't I'm not loving this, I'm loving it, you know?
Yeah, I have found that there are a lot of people going to see the Scream who have not seen all the other Scream
Isn't
movies.
that crazy?
I'm like, what?
I mean, it's like, it's so weird to be like, I'm gonna start now. But I do also think with this new one is that it's breaking off so much that it's becoming its own thing that you probably don't need to know the history so much. But yeah, I really enjoy the first three. I think they're all pretty great.
I like the first one. The second one's fine. I'm a huge fan of the third one, probably because it was the first one that I got to see in theaters. But I know that everyone hates the third one. So.
I like it. I rewatched it recently. Because part of the moment thing, I went on like a Wes Craven deep dive, and I think that like that's when I was like, wow, there's something so interesting about his work. But yeah, it's just that one's weird and fun, and I like the whole twist,
Yeah,
you
oh my
know?
God, I love it. I love the reveal. Scott Foley's gonna be on Broadway soon. So I'm like, oh, Roman Bridger is gonna be on Broadway. Yes. I wanna bring my Scream DVD for him to sign, and he will probably be like, no.
He'll probably love it. I feel like that should be a real source of pride.
I hope so.
It's
So
like Felicity, whatever. He's a Felicity, right?
I have no
Yes.
idea. I never watched Felicity. So
Oh,
I
goodness.
know. I know.
That's
I
okay.
just I didn't watch a lot of TV growing up besides like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Tales
That's
from the
great.
Crypt. So
Well, okay. I can't cope with that. There is no shade in that.
So what is your favorite horror movie been so far that you've seen in 2023?
2023. Oh my God, I have to look at my list because I knew you were going to ask me this question. Because I started last year, I was like trying to make a list of all the movies I watched or what were some of my favorite movies. And I just did such a horrible job of it. And so I actually got on Letterboxd to make a list of all of my movies. And now it only goes back to 3 weeks. I would say, well, like for the first time, like released.
Yeah. Or just like new in general that you have maybe from like the last couple of years that you've watched this year.
Well, I would say Husera is probably my favorite horror watch of new films.
Which one? Oh, who's
Husera,
are you?
I would say that, yes. And then, I didn't get a chance to see Attack the Block when we had it at MoMA. And sorry, we watched it when we screened it at Nighthawk. And I love that movie so much.
It's fun. It's fun.
I think Sarah is probably one of my favorites. I get a little like sometimes confused as to when movies came out and like when I first saw them. And I've been doing some screening work for another festival. And so I feel like I've watched everything and nothing all at the same time. I'm like, oh, was the Jennifer Kent episode of The Cabinet of Curiosities, was that this year or was that last year? That was last year. Or was it this year? I don't remember.
I don't know. I have no
It's
idea.
like, I guess I'm in denial. It's also like we're crouching into the end of March.
What is time?
What is time?
So, on the flip side of that, what horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of 2023?
Oh, I don't even know. All the ones that I don't know about. I think that's like, to me, that's sort of the next unknown gem that I find is sort of what I'm looking forward to. I know that sounds very vague, but like sometimes I don't know. And then someone will be like, oh, did you see this at this? And they send me something and I'm like, oh my God, this is absolutely incredible. But yeah,
Awesome.
that's the next thing I don't know that I'm going to love is sort of what I'm looking forward to. Like gets passed to me. But yeah, maybe the Addams Family, they have a new film coming out that I'm very much looking forward to. Talk to Me, I'm looking forward to that coming out. There's My Animal. There's like good stuff coming out, you know.
There's a lot of good stuff coming out, especially like in the next month or two.
Oh, I'm also looking forward to Renfield, obviously.
Yeah, that comes out on my birthday, so that's what I'm gonna go do on my birthday.
That's
So
incredible. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm looking forward to that.
hopefully Nick Cage has more lines in that than he did in Willy's Wonderland.
All he has to do is say hello. He has more lines than anyone
Yeah.
really. That's funny. I thought you were going to say in Pig because he doesn't talk in Pig very much either. But yeah, I just, I don't want it to disappoint like Magic. I was so excited for the new Magic Mike and that was very disappointing. So I'm hoping that Renfield gives it to us, but I think it will. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I don't think Nick Cage would let us down.
I
So
don't think he can.
he made it through Willy's Wonderland and made us love him with almost no dialogue. So
I remember watching that and I was like, he's really, I didn't know going into it that he didn't speak. And I was like, that's a bold move to have a movie with Nicolas Cage and he doesn't talk. That's really admirable, try
Oh, it's amazing.
that. It's so good. Yes.
Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Trying to think of some of the no. I feel like I don't know. I feel like most of the people were like, oh. But no, I don't. Even the shitty horror movies that I like, I feel like other people like the shitty horror movies.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
I would remake Devil's Nightmare, which is from late 70s. It's like a Belgian horror film about a group of travelers who wind up by Satan's hand in this castle with this former Nazi whose family female lineages are all succubi, but his maid who slept with his brother, I'm doing a really bad job of this. Anyway, a succubus comes and she tempts all these people, and it's Erica Blanc, and it's so good. She tempts the priest. There's like one of the men's corrals, or it's all like the kind of seven deadly sins sort of things. It's in a castle. It's so wonderful. When they get killed by the devil, it's this like amazing like devil like mark tattoo thing that they get. It's so great. It's so good. That would be the movie I would remake.
Who would you cast in the main role?
Jeez Louise. I don't know. Who would I cast? Erica Blanc, because I think she's still alive. That would be amazing. have her still do it. Maybe was it Micah Monroe
Oh, yeah, she's
from
so good.
I think she's so lovely. She would be great in
So my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Oh my God, I'm immediately laughing because like I'm thinking about the killer in Black Christmas who just stays up in the attic and I wouldn't have to deal with him.
That
Yeah,
your answer?
I think that's my answer. Or any sort of like cool devil.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here and for chatting with me. Do you want to tell everyone where they can
Welcome.
find you and your film series and the future of film is female online?
Sure. Website, futureoffilmisfemale.com. Instagram, futureoffilmisfemale. Twitter, it's the FOFIS. I'm like an old person. I'm still on Twitter. But yeah, and that's where you'll find where our upcoming screenings are and when our next grant cycles open up. They're in spring and fall, and anything else that we're sort of doing. But yeah, sign up for our newsletter too, because we always do partner with distributors for preview screenings. Sometimes they're free. You can come see it. And then, yeah. Oh, I will say one thing, and it's not coming out this year, but I'm very much looking forward to the next thing that Nikki Yatujusu does. I know she's working on a script now after Nanny, and I just think she's amazing, and I want to see everything that she does next. And I'm glad she's getting a chance to do it. So I'll just punctuate it with that.
Awesome. Yeah, Nanny was really interesting. Yeah, it's good. All
So
right, well,
good.
thank you so much. Have a good night.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Karen Coleman, and thanks again to Karen for coming on. I'll leave links to where you can find her and the future of Film is Female in the show notes. Don't forget to sign up for their newsletter so you can hear about all of the awesome screenings that they're planning in New York and LA. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod. We're on Instagram at Who's There Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.